Today's shiur is Masef the Erech and Daf Chaf Aleph. We will begin on Daf Chaf on the base. Four lines from the bottom. Vika Damas Laha. At the end of our previous shiur, we had learned the Mishnah about when somebody makes something hegdish, when is he held responsible if something should happen to that item, when he's not held responsible. The Gemara asked the question. We had the Mishnah. We had the Rav Chiya Bar Rav's statement, we had a Brisa statement, and how can we reconcile all of these statements? And the Gemara's final teretz at the end of our shiur yesterday was that one of the situations that one of the Brisas refers to is where somebody said that something that isn't in the world yet should become hektish. And the Gemara said, it obviously has to follow the opinion of Rameyer that holds Adam Magdish. So what happens in our shir now, at the beginning of the shir, the first part of the shir, is where the Gemara quotes a different issue, not connected at all to the issue that we learned in the previous shir. And the reason the Gemara quotes this issue is to teach us that in this version, this is where they had to come to the conclusion that there's a brice that follows the opinion of Rameyer. Of Adam Magdish Tavish Shalai Balayim. A word of introduction to the shir. Tarek Dasha speaks quite extensively about a house that has a negat saras. And when a house has a negat saras, the Kohen could quarantine the house. Machloikas Taisus and the Rosh in our sugya. What is the status of the house during that time? According to Taisus, the house may not be lived in. It's also Bahanoah. According to the Rosh, it technically could be lived in, just nobody will want to live in it. And then, at a certain point, the Kohen has to demolish the house. So begins the Gemara. Vika Damas Laha. Some say the Rameyah's din refers to the following situation. Hamas Gabayis L'chaver is somebody rents a house to someone else. V'nesnaga. And the house has a negat saras, says the Brisa, after pishachot koyin, it's quarantine. And as we just learned, according to Tosfos, so the renter, the tenant, may not live there. According to the Rosh, the tenant won't want to live there. Omaloi, the landlord still has a right to say to the tenant, hareshel cholafanachem. This is the house. It's your bad luck. However, says the Brisa, if it comes to the point of notzoi, where the Kohen destroys the home, then Chayv Lahamad Lebayis. Then the owner, the landlord, has to give the tenant a new home because he rented out a home to him. And as Rashi and the Rishonim explain, the house getting a nega is not the fault of the tenants. It's the fault of the landlord. And therefore, the landlord has to supply a new home. Furthermore, I didn't say it, both according to Tosfos and Rosh, while the house is quarantined, even though the landlord doesn't have to give him a replacement, he, on the other hand, doesn't have to pay rent. Interesting, if we look in the Shulchan Aruch, the Chasdei David explains the different situations. We have in our Gemara a number of situations, a Gemara and other situations. One is a situation where the house has a negat saras, but it's only quarantined. So clearly the Gemara teaches us that the landlord can tell the tenant, Hareshel Cholafanecha. We have another situation where the house is being demolished by the Kohen. There the Gemara clearly says the landlord has to give a new home. But what's the halacha, and this is the most common situation that we probably have in our lives, a tenant lives in a house, a Rechman Tzlan is a catastrophe, and the house collapses, there's a fire or whatever. And now, that house no longer exists. Does the landlord have to give a new apartment or not? A new home to the tenant? So Shulchan Aruch actually says that he doesn't. And the Chasdei David tries to explain why is that different than the house that had a negat saras that the landlord is held responsible, as our Gemara just said. So he explains. He explains as follows. If a house gets a nega, you can't say it's the tenant's fault. It's not the tenant's home. And if there's a neged, it must be because of the landlord. If a house, rachmana litzlan, however, is destroyed by fire or whatever, there it's already not so clear to the Shulchan Aruch whose fault is it. Is it the landlord's fault or the tenant's fault? And therefore, there the tenant is a moitzi mechavera. He's trying to demand that the landlord supply him a new home. A moitzi mechavera all of a ride, the landlord could say it's your fault that the house was destroyed. Continues the b'raisa. Hikdisha hadarba. If the tenant is magdish the home, the aloch is malus chala hegdish. She pays rent to the hegdish. Ask the Gemara. Hikdisha hadarba. If the tenant was magdishit, the question is, how could he have ever done something like that? Hechi matz magdish law. How could he be magdish something that he doesn't own? Doesn't the Torah Kedosha teach us? Ish ki yagdish beisei kodesh amarachmana. Ma beisei berishusoi of kol berishusoi. You only can be magdish something that you own. So how could a tenant be magdish a house that he's renting? Answers the Gemara Hachikam. This is what the Braisa says. Hikdishoi maskir. If the landlord is magdish the home, Hadarba, so now the person who lives there, malus chala hegdish. Now the tenant doesn't pay rent to the landlord, he pays rent to hegdish. Ask the Gemara, let's understand this. Hegdishai masker, if I am the landlord of a home, and I went and I was magdish that home, ask the Gemara, hegdayba, how could you continue living there? It's hegdish. And once it's hegdish, you're not allowed to live there. And there's actually machlokes rishonim how to understand this gemara. Some rishonim say it's actually a combination between the hegdish and the tenant, but every inch of this house has this joint ownership. Therefore, he can't remain there. Others learn it much simpler. Once the landlord is magdish, it becomes hegdish and you can't live in a home that's hegdish. Furthermore, Taisvis, interesting Taisvis. Taisvis quotes a Tosefta that says just the opposite of Al Gemara. Al Gemara is saying that if I own a home and you rent it, so I, the landlord, have the right to remagdish it, you, the tenant, do not. The Tosefta says just the opposite. The tenant has the right to remagdish it and not the landlord. So how do we reconcile? So Taisvis has a very simple terence. Taisvis says, it depends if the tenant already paid up the rent or didn't. If the tenant already paid up the rent, then he has the right to remagdish it. If he didn't pay the rent for the apartment yet for this term, then the landlord has the right to remagdish it. And actually, the Paiskim use this distinction that Taisvis makes, la'aloch l'maisa. There's a very interesting din in Shulchan Aruch. Those that are somewhat familiar with the Shulchan Aruch know that in Aruchayim, there's a whole section of Simonim about Hilchas Beis HaKnesses. Says the Shulchan Aruch that if there's a home, if there is a shul, a community, a kehillah, has a shul, but they don't own the shul, they rent the shul, so it doesn't have the Kedushas Beis HaKnesses. That's what it says in Shulchan Aruch. And the Mishnah Berurah immediately and all the Nisei Kalim don't understand. What's the difference if we, the community, own the shul or rent the shul? A shul is a shul. And in fact, the Mishnah Berurah says a very interesting pshat. He says that the case that the Shulchan Aruch refers to is referring to times, unfortunately, in the history of the Jewish people that they weren't allowed to have shuls. So the shul they had was underground. They've tried to find a place that they could, nobody would know that they're gathering to daven, and they took a place that was underground, and they rented it, and they never meant to turn it into a real basic Knesset. But certainly when you have a very nice edifice, just it's not owned, it's rented, it has the din of a basic Knesset. That's what the Shulchan Aruch says. That's how the Mishnah Berurah explains. But other Paiskim use the distinction that we just quoted from Taisvis to explain that Pesach the Shulchan Aruch. Certainly they say if a community is renting a shul and they paid the rent, then you have Hilchos Beis HaKnesses. But if you didn't pay the rent, so you can't consider the tenants. And therefore, if even though the tenants are using it as a shul, Hilchos Beis HaKnesses might not apply. But back to our question. The Gemara here is referring to a situation that the landlord, and the way we just explained, the landlord has that right, was Magdish the Haum. So the question is, how could the tenant continue to live there? How may the tenant continue living there? The Milakai, it's Hegdish. And you're not allowed to use Hegdish. And the Farsha point out, there's a question if there's Mila by something that's Mechubal Karka. So isn't the home Mechubal Karka? So they explain that since the material from which a home is built was originally detached and then only was put together to build, that's not called Mechubal Karka. The Su, and furthermore, asked the Gemara, Malas Chala Hegdish, why does the Brisa Paskin, that you have to keep on paying rent to Hegdish, isn't the Halacha, the Kivin the Malbe, as soon as you did Mila, Nafak Bey, Schal Chulin, which means as follows, that there's a Dida Mila, this is where Rashi learns Pshat in this Gemara, that if somebody's Mail Behegdish, so he did a terrible Aveira. But part of what happens when you're Moil is that takes the item that's Hegdish and makes it a Techulin. So how does this home continue being Hegdish? As soon as he lived there, after the landlord was Magdish it, he was Moil and it's no longer Hegdish. That's how Rashi learns. Tysus disagrees. Because Tysus says it only becomes Chulin if it is the intention of the person who's Moil to make it a Techulin. That's not the intention of this tenant. And therefore, Tysus says the Gemara's question is that he should be responsible. Why does the Brisa paskin that he only has to pay the rent? He should have to add a chaymish. Because the law is when you're moil, you have to add a chaymish. That's the Gemara's question. So how do we understand the Brisa? Answers the Gemara that the Brisa is referring, and this is how we bring it to full circle, that the landlord said, l'chishyov eschar yagdish. Not that it's immediately hegdish. That the rent, as you pay it, should become hegdish. Ask the Gemara, but how could somebody make such a statement? And this isn't here yet, the rent. Answers the Gemara, Amr Yehudam Rav, Hamani, who's the town of this price, Rav Meir, that we learned already yesterday, are the Magdish Tavishla Beloilam. Ikadamri, a different version of this dialogue, Amr Yehapap Labaya, Vamal Ramar Bechamal Rav Chizda, Taman, how could we understand that you could be Magdish rent that doesn't even exist yet? Kremeya. It must be following the opinion of Rameya. Dama Adam Magdishtava Shabaloilam. Says of Amalei, Elakaman. Who else must I be following if not Rameya? Says the Mishnah. Chayve Erchin, Mamashkin, my son. If somebody pledges an Erech, then we could take from him a Mashkin. So the Brisk Rav explains that there are two ways of understanding the Mishnah. Because there would be two reasons why one would take a Mashkin. One reason somebody would take a mashkin is to force you to do the mitzvah. So I take a mashkin security to make sure that you're going to pay the erech. The other reason somebody would take a mashkin is to collect. The hegdish is coming to collect what's owed to them, and that's how they get their payment. What's the simple nafkamina? The simple nafkamina is who would be taking the mashkin. If the point of the mashkin of our Mishnah, says the Vriskarov, is just to force you to get to do the mitzvah, so that doesn't obligation. If the point of the mashkin here is to get payment, then it's Hegdish's, the administrator, the gizbar of Hegdish's responsibility. Furthermore, as we know, these are psukim in the Torah, there are very specific rules to when you take a mashkin, when you take security. You have to be careful not to take something that he needs. If he needs it by night, you have to give them back today, vice versa. So if it's payment, all of those rules don't apply. If it's a mashkin, then those rules apply. Continues the Mishnah. Chai v'chatzva shamas. But let's say somebody owes a karm chatzva an asham, aim a mashkin, my son. Again, here too, the question is, why would we take a mashkin? We'll speak about it more in a moment. But why over here wouldn't we? Because somebody who owes a karm chatzva an asham is not going to have a kapara. So he doesn't need an incentive to bring the Karm Chatzis Hashem, he'll do it on his own. And that's why Eim HaMashkin Nisa. So Rishonim make a very important point here. And it goes back to the first rule of the Mishnah. It's a very difficult rule. Here you have an individual who took a pledge of Erech. So why should it be Mashkin Nisa? Why would we assume that he's not paying? So Rishonim explained, of course, it's not just if I go and I make an obligation to say an Erech, okay, they show up and take away a mashkin. Why would they do that? Why would the Mishnah is referring to a situation where they see that I'm not paying. And since they see that I'm not paying, they have to be concerned. And that's why they're mashkin, my son. Whereas, continues the Mishnah, by chatas for asham, we need not be concerned about that, because the person has an incentive, and therefore aim a mashkin, my son. So therefore say to Rishayim, and that's beautiful. Why would be the halacha? We learned together, Masech to Rosh Hashanah, that if somebody owes a carbon, and three yamim taivim are passed, the sholosh regalim are passed, and you haven't paid, then there's an isra baal ta'achar. So it's say to Rishayim, that even by a chatas for asham, if three yamim taivim are passed, and I still haven't paid, even though it's chatas for asham, a mashkenai son. Because here we already have reason to believe that he isn't going to pay. He already fell into baal ta'achar. They give another example. Where even chatas for asham would be mashkenai son. Let's say somebody did an aver for which there's a chiv chatas for asham. And he and his own did not volunteer and doesn't even agree that he owes the carbon. But he was taken to Beis Din. And Beis Din passed him that he owes the chatas for asham. So he clearly doesn't want to give the chatas for asham. He's only doing it because Beis Din passed him. So we have to take a mashkin, otherwise he won't give it. Or, the Rishonim give another example. What will be the halacha, they say, where somebody owes a chatas for asham, was magdish a behema, and the behema is sitting in his backyard and he never brings it. So we have to be concerned there's a reason he's not bringing it. And therefore, mamashkin, my son. But, continues the Mishnah, chai v'oilus v'shlomim, where common oil and common shlomim are typically brought as a voluntarily, and therefore there's nothing pushing him to bring them, so mamashkin, my son. Even though, continues the Mishnah, even though you were forced, einem eskap, apishem eskapish achit tzrat, shenema l'ritzoinai. But, says the Mishnah, so we need to understand, the Mishnah is asking a question. If the carbon is only effective, if I brought it by free will, and you forced me to bring it, so what kind of carbon is that? Says the Mishnah, the Beis Din forces me to say that I'm happy. We'll speak about this more. There are many situations where the Gemara speaks about get, that the Beis Din has a right to force them to get divorced, but the husband doesn't want. And a get, most of forced get is not a valid get. So, to understand this concept, so first of all, and we'll speak about this perhaps later more, there's machloikas achorinim, that where he's forced, must he articulate the words roitzani, or just the fact that he brings it is enough. So there's a very famous machloikas rishonim in this concept of kaifanai sa'achiyam roitzani. Tosfos learns that what's pshat kaifin I sachi emiratzani. Why do I not have a right to force you to spend money where you don't want? Because it's your money, and you can do with your money what you want. But in a case where the Torah obligates you to spend your money, so then there's no problem, because it's not yours to keep. The Torah already said that the money is owed elsewhere. That's how Tosfos explains. But we all remember, there's a famous Rambam. The Rambam says, what's pshat and kaifanai sa'achi emiratzani? He says, truthfully, every Jew wants to do the right thing. Unfortunately, the Yetzer Hara gets in our way. So, kaifanai sa'achi, by the forcing, what they're doing is they're pushing the Yetzer Hara out of the way, and then the true Jew comes out, who wants to do what's right. The Ksav Sofer says, the pasuk that our Mishnah uses to teach us the sin of kaifanai sa'achi v'aymer roitzani is the pasuk by the carbon oila, where it says l'ritzoinai lifnei Hashem. It says, why does Torah have to add the words lifnei Hashem? So it says l'ritzoinai. Why lifnei Hashem? So it says, with the Rambam was very understandable, because who really knows what's in the heart of a Jew? God knows what's in our heart. L'ritzoinai kaifanai sa'achi v'aymer roitzani. It's under duress lifnei Hashem. Hashem says, I know it's not really under duress. I know that in his heart, this is what he wants to do. And that's why he goes on to explain the Ksav Sofer, beautiful Vart, that why is the carbon oila where the Torah teaches us the sin of kaifanai sa'achi v'aymer roitzani. So he says pshat like this. We know that why would somebody bring a carbon oila? The Gemara says somebody, they brought carbon oila because somebody had hirhur mra, he had machshav to do the wrong thing. So says the Ksav Seifa. If somebody, says the Ksav Seifa, if somebody did an Aveira, so there very much we could understand that he didn't really want to do the Aveira. He walked by where he wasn't, and he fell into, he went where he wasn't supposed to go, and he ate what he wasn't supposed to eat. He fell in. We're human beings. But machshava is in our control. And we would therefore think that if you had an inappropriate machshava, we can't just say it's a shayig. Teach us the Tayrak Daisha, that even under those circumstances, we really know that even if he had a bad machshava, certainly with a bad maisa, that's not who he really is. The Bali Musa say, the Pasuk says, lo yir b'cho el zor. So Pashpashat, the Torah is teaching us that we shouldn't have idols. But the question is, why does the Torah use the words lo yir b'cho in you? The Torah said, lo yir el zor. So, explain the Bali Musa. What the Torah is teaching us is that if we have in our hearts a bad machshava, or we want to do the wrong thing, it's zor. It's strange to Klal Yisrael. Because Klal Yisrael, as the Rambam says, really has no connection to that type of a life. Says the Yisroch Moshe. There's a very famous Gemara in Masechta Shabbos, Tapeitas. Melamed, Shekofer Aleim Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu forced Klal Yisrael, Kofer Aleim HaKigigas. He forced us to accept the Torah. So all the Mepharshim ask, so what kind of Kabbalah Satorah is that if we were forced? So says the Yisroch Moshe, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu forced us to accept the Torah, because it's like the Rambam says, he knew who we really are. And he knew that really in the depths of our heart, we want to do what's right. Just the Yetzirah gets in the way. So that's why Kafalim, he was able to force us, and the true Jew came out. And that's why he explains, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu forced Klal Yisrael to accept the Torah, he could have just as well forced the Umas HaOlam to accept the Torah. Says the Yisroch Moshe, no, because it's very different. Klal Yisrael in their hearts, as the Rambam says, really are good. And therefore, all you need to do is get that Yetzirah a little out of the way. The Umas HaOlam don't have that heart, don't have that inside, and therefore, there was no point in Kaif and Isai. And they go on to explain. We know, after the Chet HaEgel, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said that we should bring a Machzis HaShekel. And everybody tries to understand why a machzis a shekel. Why not a whole shekel? So they explain. Because when you do an aveira, there are two parts to the aveira. There's the actual aveira that you have committed, and there's the thought behind the aveira. But the thought behind the aveira doesn't exist at Klal Yisrael. Because in our hearts, we're really good. All we need forgiveness for is what we did wrong. So you only have to bring a machzis a shekel. Seirach Sfarim HaKadoshim. Every day, three times a day, we say in Aleinu, the word, Vashivaisa el Levavecha. What do you mean with those words? So they explain that's the Rambam. What is the Lev? What is the heart of the Jew? Like the Rambam says, the heart of a Jew is good. And we daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Vashivaisa el Levavecha. We should get reconnected to our hearts. We should get reconnected to what we really are, to our true selves. And that's why Vashivaisa, that's how we will become closer to Hashem. Begins the Gemara. Amar Papa Pam, there are times Shechayv Echatz and Mashkin Esoy. There are situations where somebody's Chayv Echatz and we make him give a Mashkin. And on the other situation, opposite of what the Mishnah said, and there are Chayv Oilus Eim a Mashkin Esoy. And explains the Mishnah. Explains the Gemara. Chayv Echatz and Mashkin Esoy. The Chatz Nazir. The halacha is that a Nazir has to bring three carbonis. A Chatz, a Oila, and a Shlomim. And the Gemara Masechta Nazir teaches us that as soon as you brought one of those karbonis, the kivud amamar, a gilech, and gilech al echem ishloshtim, even if you just brought one of those three karbonis, yotza, the nizikal of echem and adamim, and if just one of the blood of one of these karbonis are sprinkled on you, at that point, huta anozer, lishtis yayin utamil mesim, so he's back to normal. So now we have to be concerned because the carbon chattis won't make a difference. He's already off the hook anyway. So that's why even though it's a chattis, we could force him. There's no incentive for him to bring it. On the other hand, chayva oilus eimemashkenoi son, boilus yiledus. So the Gemara is assuming that when a woman has a child, she has to bring a carbon oil and a carbon chattis. And the Gemara is assuming that you have to bring first the oil and then the chattis. So since you have to bring the oil and the chattis, and only at that point may the Yoledis go into the Beis Hamikdash. Only at that point may the Yoledis eat kachim. So she has an incentive to bring the carbon oil, and therefore we need not force her. That's why the Gemara is saying you don't have to force her on that carbon oil. Why, says the Gemara, makes you say this? Dag mikrom, because we see in the Pasuk, when the Torah teaches us that a Yoledis has to bring an oil and a chatos, the Torah says the oil before the chatos. Ask the Gemara, Vamar Rava, we learned the Gemara Masechta Zvachim that says, L'mikra Gdima Kosov. It's not that you have to bring the oil before the chatos, and only then Chichi Kachim, and only then may she enter the Beis HaMikdash. It's just that the Torah says the oil before the chatos, but you bring the chatos and you're fine. So that can be pshat. So the Farship, the big Machloikas Rishonim, what does it mean here? We're saying now in the Gemara, we learned this Gemara Masechta Zvachim, we had this discussion there as well, that you have to really bring the chatos before the oil. But the Torah, when it speaks about the Kabbalahs, speaks about the oil before the Chatas. What does that mean? So Rashi says that that's the order the Torah said. Rashi is a very difficult Rashi to understand. If it's not the order that we're following, what does it mean that the Torah just put it in that order? So I saw a very nice verse from the Paradis Yosef. The Gemara says, why does a woman bring a carbon when she had a baby? What did she do wrong? So famous Gemara, the Gemara says that a woman goes through the pain of labor. She thinks to herself, I'm making a shvuah, I'm never going to have children again. And for that, she has to bring a carbon. What did we say a few minutes ago? What does an oil come for? For her hurim. So the main carbon she ought to bring is the oil. That's what the Torah mentions, the oil first. That's Rashi's pshat. Tosfos says a different pshat. The Gemara indeed is teaching us, and so is the halacha. She has to bring a carbon oil and carbon chatos, so she brings the carbon chatos first. But she also has to designate these two animals or these two birds as a carbon oil and carbon chatos. Designation? You magdish the oil first. First you magdish the oil, then you magdish the chatos, and then you bring the chatos first. That's what the Gemara means, lomikro. The sheet says a third pshat, interesting pshat. As I just said, you have to bring two carbonos. The woman, the yoledis, has to bring oil and a chatos. But what would be the halacha if the woman only can bring one carbon? There's a mikra, there's a situation that there's only one bird available, one animal available. What should she do? Bring the oil. That's what the Torah means. But back to where we're up to. So here the oil is not essential. She'll bring a chatas. She could eat kachim. She could enter the Beis HaMikdash. Of course she should be forced to bring the carbon oil. Answers the Gemara. Arab oils mitzayra. The halacha was speaking about oils mitzayra. The Tanya. Rav Shmuel ben Asher ben Yehuda ben Brekoi Emma, Shem Shech, the Aloch is a Metzayra, when he finishes his Tzaras, has to bring an Oila and a Chatos and an Osham, and he teaches us, Shem Shech Atos of Hashem Ikvasoi, that until he brings all the Kabbonis, Kach Alos Mikvasoi, he can't eat Kachim, he can't enter the Beis HaMikdash, and therefore, there's no need for us to pressure him, he has his own incentive to bring the carbon Oila. We learned in the Mishnah, so we force him to bring the carbon. Okay, so as we explained earlier, a carbon oil has to be brought with intent. Ask the Gemara, what's Shmuel teaching us? Tanina. Because we just learned in our Mishnah, Dav bi she'enem skapaloi ad she'yisratza. She'nemar, l'ritzaynoi. So what's Shmuel teaching us that we haven't learned in the Mishnah? Answered the Gemara, l'tzricha deparsh lechavri. Somebody else designated an animal on my behalf. Ma'adetema, so we would think, ki be'inen das, where is my intent necessary? Mididei, avo b'dechavri, if you're giving it on my behalf, then my intent isn't necessary. Grof says, because it should work with alumnus of Zochin La'adam Shalai B'fanof. Kamash Malon. Zin Dalichne L'chapa Midi D'loi D'day. I want to use my own carbon. And therefore, even if it's your animal, but I want my own animal. And therefore, you have to have das. There's a very interesting tshuvas Oynig Yontif. A shayla that could come up. He speaks about such a situation. There was an appeal in the shul. And there was a man in the shul who was very influenced by what was by the cause, and he pledged a very big amount of money for that tzedakah. His father's sitting there, and his father knows that his son can't afford that kind of a pledge. So what does the father do? He says, I'll pay for it. I'll pay my son's pledge. So, at first glance, what's wrong? There was a pledge that tzedakah should get whatever amount of money, and the tzedakah got the money. Then the Adi Yantav says, it's not so simple. He says, because when somebody pledges tzedakah, there are two elements to that pledge. One element to the pledge is that the tzedakah should get the amount that it's supposed to get. But there's another element. I'm pledging that I want to participate in the mitzvah of tzedakah. So in a situation where I'm a chuyiv to do it, like the carbon, so you could give it on my behalf. But tzedakah is something that I volunteer to give. So even if the tzedakah got the funds it's supposed to get, but I promise to do the mitzvah of tzedakah, and if somebody else pays for it, that mitzvah hasn't been fulfilled. So Yitzchak Zilberstein takes this shaila one step further. He says there was a simcha in a shul. And we know in many shuls, the custom is when somebody gets an aliyah, he is menadev money on behalf of the shul. So somebody made a simcha and he had guests. And the guests got aliyahs. And they promised when they had a mishaberach to give money to the shul. Matzah Shabbos, the bas simcha, goes over to the gabbai and tells the gabbai, I'd like you to make a calculation of all the money that my guests owe, and I want to pay it on their behalf. Gabbai makes the cheshbon, and he pays. So now the question is, do these people still have to give? Why? Because if we just explained from the Oinig Yontif that a mitzvah tzedakah, there are two parts. There's one part that the tzedakah should get the tzedakah it's supposed to get. But there's another part where I volunteer to do mitzvah tzedakah, I now have the obligation to do that mitzvah. So when the Baal Simcha pays, the tzedakah got its money. But they haven't fulfilled their obligation. Meisvei, ask the Gemara, it says in a Braisa, if somebody says, I'm going to pay somebody else's obligation, Ladas, if it was done that the person who's obligating the carbon is aware of it, Yotza, Shloi Ladas, La Yotza. I lost a vil shlomim shloplani alai, but if I said it by carbon oil and a carbon shlomim, Ben Ladas, Ben Shloi Ladas, it makes no difference if you know or not, it's Yotza. Amalach Shmu, says Shmu, Ki Tanya Hi, the braisa that differentiates between a chatas and asham and an oil and a shlamim is talking b'shas kapara. B'shas the irtzi. The irtzi b'shas kafrosha. Ki amina no b'shas hafrosha. Which means as follows. There are two stages. There's when the animal is actually designated and there's when the animal is actually brought. So Shmuel says as follows. This is the way Rashi explains Shmuel's opinion. By all kabbonis, chatos, osham, oil, shlomim, they're all the same. B'shas hafrosha, at the moment of designation, the halacha is, you have to have the consent of the person that the carbon is being brought on his behalf. You don't know if he's happy that you're bringing the carbon on his behalf. Then, by oil and shlomim, we could assume that if you consented at the beginning, that consent continues. Well, however, by chatas fin osham, there, because it's being brought for an aveira, it isn't enough that we know that you consented at the moment of designation. There, Shmuel says, you have to also have consent at the time of the carbon itself. That's the explanation of Shmuel according to Rashi. According to this explanation, why would be the halacha that we know by oila and shlomim that he consented at the time of designation? But before the actual hakrava, before the actual time of kapara, the person declares, I'm withdrawing my consent. So according to Rashi, according to Shmuel, even by oil and shlomim, it shouldn't be effective. And that's how the Mefarshim explained Rashi's pshat. The Rambam disagrees. The Rambam says that according to Shmuel, by oil of a shlomim, If you consented at the moment of Afrasha, that's all you need. Upliga de Ula, says the Gemara, this is the opposite of what Ula says. Dam Ula, Ula says, Lo chilku ben chattis loyla, el shechattis tzvichadas b'shas Afrasha, ve'el ein tzvichadas b'shas Afrasha. Ula says just the opposite. Where is there a difference between an oil and a shlomim versus a chattis and ashram at the moment of designation? Since, we need to understand Ula's opinion. Since Ula says the moment of designation is not such a crucial moment, it doesn't make, an oil and shlomim are voluntary carbon, so we don't care. Chattis ashram is not voluntary, so we even look at the designation. Ava b'shas kapara, when the actual carbon is being brought, says Ula, it makes no difference. Chatzis Osham, Oil Shlomim, Idivi, all Kabonis, Ladas, if this consent of the owner, of the person who's obligated, Yotza, Shloi Ladas La Yotza. Ask the Gemara, Meisvei, it says in a Braisa, Chatosoi Vashomai, Alosa Vashloini Shaploini Lai. So the Braisa clearly says, Ladas, Yotza, Shloi Ladas La Yotza. So the Gemara says, we treat all Kabonis the same way. How do we understand this Braisa? So the Gemara very simple. Shmuel Mukilei, Shmuel is going to say that the Braisa is talking about the Shas Afrosha. And the Shas Afrosha, according to Shmuel, by all Kabbonis, consent is required. Ula Mukilei, and Ula is going to say that the Braisa is talking about the Shas Kapara. Because according to Ula, by all Kabbonis, at the time of Kapara, you have to have Das. Amar Rapapa, Masnisa Adodi Lakasha. And furthermore, there's no question between the Braises. Habishas Kapara, Habishas Afrosha. V'amaroi nami lekasha, and similarly, there's no question how the Amaroim, Shmuel and Ula, will explain these brises. Shmuel muki kamais b'shas kapara, that the first brise that says there's a difference between a chatas and a oila is talking b'shas kapara. The brise that treats all kabbonis the same way is speaking b'shas hafrasha. Ula, and Ula will say just the opposite. The brise that differentiates is talking about Shas Kapara, the Bryce that treats them all the same, the Bryce that differentiates is talking about Shas Afrasha, the Bryce that teaches them all the same is talking about Shas Kapara. Ask the Gemara, Amaroi Vada Pligi. So that's obvious the way that Amaroi will argue. Pshita. So what's the Gemara telling us that is a Chiddush? Answer the Gemara. The Gemara is teaching us a very big Chiddush. Because Madatayma, we might have interpreted Shmuel differently. We might have taught that what does Shmuel mean? May b'shas afrosha to come Shmuel, at b'shas afrosha. It doesn't mean only shas afrosha, but it means even the shas afrosha. If that's what Shmuel is saying, then the Bryce is indeed a difficulty with Shmuel. Kamash Shmuelon. And if it would be to Yufta, it would be a problem with Shmuel. Kamash Shmuelon, that Shmuel says by shas afrosha, das is always needed. Shas Kapara, we make the distinction, and the Brises are all fit into place. We learned in the Mishnah, we came to get the Noshim Kaifim, we forced them at Shiyami Roitzani. Amrav Sheshes, Haiman de Mosa Maidoa Gita. If somebody, before he gives a get, makes a declaration that he's doing it under duress, Maidoa Maidoa. It's considered a valid declaration, and the get is disqualified. Answers Marav Shita. Of course, there's a concept in halacha, Mesiris Meidol. Answered the Gemara, Lo Tzricha, the case that Rav Sheshes is speaking to is that Sova Ertzi. That first he gave this Meidol, and then, as we learned in the Mishnah, the Bezdin has the right to force him to give a get. And now the question is, Madutema, the actual giving of the get should be a nullification of that Meidol, Kamash Malon, that no, it's not good enough. Dimkei listening Achi Yitain. Because if the halacha is that the actual giving of the get is enough of a nullification of the Mesiris Medor, my Achi Yomer. What does the Mishnah say? Achi Yomer writes on me. It should be enough that he should just give the get. So we see Adam Mevatle Medoi. Writes on me is the way that his Medor is nullified. But I go back to what I mentioned in the Mishnah. We have here Machlokes the Machna Ephraim Alecha Mishnah. What will be the halacha? In other words, and this is relevant of anyone who is ever by a get. We always need to be concerned by the giving of a get. We always need to be concerned that maybe the husband, before he walked into Beis Din, took two Edom to the side and tells them, I'm giving this get under duress. So the halacha is, you have to be mevatel the moidos, as our Gemara says. The machlokes of the Lecha Mishnah Mach Nefrayim is how is that accomplished? The Mach Nefrayim says all you need is roitzani. If the husband says roitzani, as our Gemara seems to indicate, that's called betilas medah. Lecha Mishnah disagrees. Lecha Mishnah says you have to explicitly be mevatel any medah, and therefore according to him, roitzani would be inadequate. And you have to say, if there is a medah, I'm being mevatelit. We're machmir with the Lecha Mishnah. Says the Mishnah. The Mishnah refers to a situation where a father passed away and he left assets. He left assets that are owed. He left chayvus. So the halacha is that only real estate is meshubed. Machlokes, why? Some say that Shibudoi is not the Raisa. Only Chazal instituted a Shibud. And Chazal instituted that Shibud only on real estate, nothing else. Other Rishonim say just the opposite. Others say that Shibudoi is really Lav the Raisa. Just Chazal said that if he left real estate and the Loiva, the creditors, are recounting on it, so then Halacha is that you have to there's a shibud and they have to be used to pay the debts. But we want to make sure that the yesoimim get as much as possible for this real estate. So we go through a bidding process. We evaluate, the shum is the evaluation of the value. And then we start bidding, is anybody ready to give more? Shum yesoimim shloshim yoyim, v'shum hegdish shishim yoyim. If there's something hegdish and hegdish wants to sell it off, it's 60 days. Machrizin, as we'll see in the Gemara in a moment, but by Kabarev, every morning and every evening. So the Machlokes Rishonim, our Mishnah speaks about two situations. Shum HaYosimim and Shum HaHegdish. What would be an halacha if it's not a Yosim? Somebody's father passed away, and he's a Yosim, he lost his father, and there's assets that are mortgaged. Do you go through this process or you don't even bother? It's Machlokes Rishonim. Furthermore, the Rishonim teach us, by metaplin and by avodim, we don't do this process. Why not? So Rishonim explained, by avodim, if the eved knows he's up for sale, and we're going to start this whole bidding process, he may run away. So we don't want to waste time. Metaplin are easily ruined. So also we don't want to waste time, and we don't go through this process. Furthermore, the Yerushalmi explains, why is there a difference between hegdish, which we give 60 days, and Shema Yisrael, we give only 30 days. It's a very interesting pshat in the Yerushalmi. He says, if I obligate myself by Hegdish that I'm going to pay this amount, so we just discussed in our previous year, so I'm obligated to follow through. So that's why Hegdish isn't so pressured. However, when it's not Hegdish, until there's a Kinyan, I could always back out. So we want to make sure that I won't have time to back out, so we give it a shorter amount of time of 30 days. So the Mishnah says we do this in the morning and the evening. Ask the Ramayish of Abayk Be'erev, why do we do this in the morning and the evening? Amar Yudah Meraf, this is what Rashi explains. B'shas Yitzos Pa'alim, we want it when the workers go to work. B'shas Hachnos Pa'alim, when the workers come home from work. Explains the Gemara. B'shas Yitzos Pa'alim, we want when the workers go out to their job site. Dika D'Nichel Mizben, I'm interested in buying this property. So I tell my workers, as they're going to work, do me a favor, detour a little, easel sirely nearly, go look at the property on my behalf, I want to know if it's a good deal. And then when they come back, we make it, the nicha, because it was a long work day, and I forgot what I asked my workers in the morning. So like this, at night, when I'll hear this announcement, I remember to ask my workers, domelu nezel nishenleim. I should ask them, did you look, and is it worth it? Tanya Nami Hachi, and indeed says the Gemara, the Brisa says, Shuma Yisoyimim Shloshim Yoyim, V'Shuma Hegdash Shishim Yoyim, U'machrizu, we make this announcement, V'Boyku V'Erif, V'Shas Yitzos Palim, V'Shas Hachnosos Palim. Omer, when is announced, Sod Deploini, this property, V'Simina and Mitzurah, with its different boundaries. Kachi yoifa, this the kachi shuma, for this was it appraised. Kol aritzo yov likach yov yikach. Anybody wants to buy should buy. Why? And the Besdin continues in making the following announcement. Why are we auctioning it off? Amnas litin isha b'ksubasa u'bal b'choy b'choy b'choy. We want to pay a woman, maybe she's coming to collect the ksuba, the creditor is coming to collect his loan. Ask the Gemara, lama lila meima amnas litin isha b'ksubasa u'bal b'choy b'choy b'choy. What's the difference why we're auctioning it off? Why do we have to give the reason? Answers the Gemara, dika d'nichle b'bal b'choy. Sometimes people want to be involved in a transaction to pay creditors. The make b'zuzay. Because a creditor is a businessman. And we speak many times that in the times of Chazal, business people, coins, had an intrinsic value. But a business person is not that focused on the coins. Because he says, I'm just going to pass them on further. So I don't mind working with a businessman. Dikin nekla b'isha, t'shakli yada yad. A creditor wants his whole money. The woman isn't that necessarily looking for all of her money. And therefore, knowing what the purpose of the sale is crucial. So Taisus says, a very bechidish, and most Rishonim disagree with Taisus, that let's say Besdin comes up with a number, and a customer shows up, and says, I'm willing to give that number, we take it. Most Rishonim say that's defeating the purpose. The purpose is to see if we can get more. So if I come and I say, I'll give the number, and we just take it, how do you know we couldn't have gotten more? One more point. From here we see, that if I owe money, I have to pay it all up. I can't pay it in installments. Ksubas isha, we pay in installments, not a chayif. So certainly all the paiskim say that if I owe you money and it's ready the due date, so there's not the time for installments. I have to pay you the money. What is the halacha if I owe you money and I'm paying you before the due date? Do I then have the right to say I'm starting to pay you up before the due date? But I don't have all the money, I'll pay it to you in installments, and you have to accept it. Or do you, the mouth have a right to say, you don't have to pay me before the due date. But if you're going to pay me before, either pay me all of the money, I don't want installments, because installments get lost.